Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on inflation when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And each system contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources, and how is it stored? How is it retrieved, and what do they want it for anyway? Well, knowing how this information is gathered and what information is stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, for more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for our free general law CD package, and I'll tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and just as private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. Just call the law school direct, 417-273-4967, to order yours. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the Figge report that leads to hyperinflation. Now, all of the events that have been occurring since the Reagan administration took office back in 1981 are in place. We're ready for hyperinflation. Hasn't happened yet. But as we found out in the examples of Bolivia, Brazil, and Argentina, it can set in as little as 3 days. Not 3 weeks, 3 months, or 3 years. Hyperinflation, when it happens, will happen swiftly, suddenly, and it will be severe. Now, Dr. Richard Apple wrote an article for Kitco called "The Gloom and Doomers Find Company," published September 25th, 2005, fairly recent. He said that for over four decades, observant and open-minded individuals have become deeply concerned about the future of our great nation. They refused to accept the rosy official and media testimony regarding our nation's fiscal and monetary integrity. Similarly, they did not believe the negative rhetoric directed towards gold. And just as these independent-thinking and far-sighted people recognized that 1 + 1 would always equal 2, they also knew that no one, nor no nation, could create something out of nothing. Now, throughout this period, they witnessed the United States government and the Federal Reserve banking system work together to create U.S. dollars from thin air. Now, in order to finance our growing national budget deficits, and it was not only obvious to these people that inflation must inevitably result from our government's actions, but that numerous economic and financial distortions would occur and likely, ultimately, spawn a serious economic decline. They had learned from history of the damage that accrued to the lives of the common man whenever a nation debased its currency and turned to a fiat money supply. Stable prices within any economy are produced when there is a balance between the purchasing media in its financial system and the amount of goods and services offered on its markets. However, when the dollar value of the avoidable items and services remain essentially constant, but a country's money stock is increased, this additional monetary unit or units will over time act to bid up their domestic prices. This is what has occurred in America during the past 60 years, since the United States left the gold standard back in 1933, and it is the underlying cause of the loss of the dollar's purchasing power. According to extensive research performed by the outstanding American Institute for Economic Research, called AIER, in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, for about 150 years after the Mint Act of 1792, by which Congress established and defined the nation's currency, the purchasing power of the dollar fluctuated in a relatively narrow range. By the end of World War II, the price level was close to the peaks and the purchasing power close to the troughs reached after the War of 1812, the Civil War, and World War I. During the preponderance of this period, the dollar was defined as being worth a fixed amount of gold. Under the gold standard, dollars could not be created unless there was sufficient gold held by our government in our treasury to redeem them. Further, during most of this era, gold and dollars could be readily exchanged for one another by our government. All of this changed with the signing of the Bretton Woods Agreement in 1944. So after 1944, the dollar's purchasing power began to decline. This accelerated after President Nixon closed the gold window in 1971. With the stroke of a pen, he severed the final link of the dollar to gold. Later, in the words of the AIER, by 2000, the dollar had lost more than 90% of its original purchasing power. Now, the term gloom and doomers was likely coined by a member of the establishment, and it was likely done in an effort to discredit those who recognized this condition as well as their beliefs. This occurred because the doom and gloomers recognized early on that the excessive issuance of dollars effectively cheapened those dollars that already existed and would lead to a number of damaging results. First of all, it would create inflation. Next, the higher prices and inflated money supply would excessively stimulate the economy. These events, in turn, would foster a number of other economic and financial distortions, such as businesses and individuals would make poor economic and financial decisions. They would base their actions upon an economy which was artificially stimulated by excessive monetary creation. In that way, their judgments and actions would be predicated upon fleeting, exceptional business conditions that were largely created as the newly issued dollars worked their way through the financial system. Businesses would expand their workforces and factories and products. Additionally, they and individuals would enter into far greater debt than was truly warranted because they believed that the good times would last longer than they actually would. The excessive monetary creation, in turn, would ultimately destroy the dollar's value on the world's markets and further exacerbate the price inflation within our own nation as the cost rose of imported goods. Now, conditions have worsened to a far greater extent than anyone would have dreamed possible prior to the 1990s. Each recession since the Great Depression has been met with greater amounts of monetary and fiscal stimulus in order to extricate the economy from any economic reversal. Whenever the economy began to flounder, the money supply would be rapidly expanded and interest rates would be cut by the Federal Reserve, while the government enacted tax reductions and spending increases. Importantly, during the past several years, the Federal Reserve appears to have become hell-bent upon creating as many dollar credits as are necessary. This in order to prevent the economy from lapsing into any sort of extended or even minor recession, for fear of it snowballing into something of far greater consequence, like a Great Depression of the 1930s. Now finally, the doom and gloomers are being joined by other voices. However, now they are emanating from the establishment. Comments and declarations are now being espoused by those who are not only highly respected and authoritative, but who also hold among the most powerful position in the world's government and cooperative bodies. This morning's New York Times contained an article entitled IMF, that's the International Monetary Fund, warns of an imbalance in world consumption. The piece contained quotes from a recent International Monetary Fund report. It began with, quote, "The United States is likely to experience slower economic growth next year, and its rapidly rising foreign debt is at the heart of a dangerous global imbalance," unquote. The New York Times then continued and stated, quote, "The fund said the global economic growth had become too dependent on a handful of countries led by the United States that consume far more than they produce. That imbalance," it warned, in its semi-annual World Economic Outlook, "would lead to a wrenching correction." Now write that down, boys and girls. Dangerous global imbalances coupled with wrenching correction. Now, for the International Monetary Fund to use phrases such as dangerous global balances and wrenching corrections was referring to the possible outcome of today's global economic and financial condition is truly unprecedented. They could have used far more subtle terms, as they have in the past, to get their point across, if they did not deeply believe that the world's economy was at great risk. Now, the New York Times article went on to say, quote, "In an evident reference to the United States with its big budget deficits and relentless consumer spending, the International Monetary Fund warned that the world's consumption is fueled by increasingly unsustainable fiscal stimulus, as well as housing prices that are ignoring the laws of gravity," unquote. All right, boys and girls, get your pen out and write down unsustainable fiscal stimulus along with wrenching correction and dangerous global imbalances. Now, with these strong statements of concern, if not outright fear, I believe that the International Monetary Fund is sending a scathing message. It's not only to the United States, but to the rest of the world, that the worst fears of the doom and gloomers of the past not only have validity, but that they may come to fruition if major structural changes in the United States do not occur. And occur rapidly. This stern warning was for the United States to limit its dangerous monetary expansion, increase its taxes, and force its consumers to rein in their wanton spending. Or, not only the United States, but the entire world would suffer the consequences as a result. Now, these alarming statements by one of the world's preeminent organizations followed a similar statement by the president of the Federal Reserve Bank, Alan Greenspan. In a recent speech, Mr. Greenspan discussed the historical precedent that resulted whenever investors became overly excited about certain investments. You ready, boys and girls? Write it down. Overly excited about certain investments. Overly excited goes along with unsustainable fiscal stimulus, wrenching correction, and dangerous global imbalances. This occurred when buyers threw caution to the wind and ignored the risks produced by their actions. By driving prices to unsupportable high levels, he stated, quote, "Thus, this vast increase in the market value of asset claims is in part the indirect result of investors accepting lower compensation for risk. Such an increase in market value is too often viewed by market participants as structural and permanent. But that they perceive as newly or But what they perceive as newly abundant liquidity can readily disappear. Any onset of increased investor caution elevates risk premiums and, as a consequence, lowers asset values and promotes the liquidation of the debt that supported higher asset prices. This is the reason that history has not dealt very kindly with the aftermath of protracted periods of low-risk premiums." Write that down, boys and girls. Low-risk premiums. Today, investors are buying government bonds, and they expect to make a 4% interest or 4% profit off of their investment. But inflation is already running at around 12% a year. Depending upon who you listen to, 10%, 8%, even the CPI admits it's up to 6%. Now, boys and girls, it's becoming unsustainable. And people like Alan Greenspan and the International Monetary Fund and the New York Times are now chiming in with all of the right-wing radicals, the doomsayers, the doom and gloomers, who over the past 30 years have been saying this cannot go on forever. Along with the Grace Commission report and the Figge report that I gave you last time. You know, there's an ultimate end. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. And we have been violating some economic laws. Economic laws set down by Moses out at Mount Sinai, 3,100 years ago. Laws that were designed into the world, into the universe. Laws that exist, and they exact penalties, whether we know about them, whether we believe in them, whether we understand them or not, is irrelevant and immaterial. For every action, there is an equal opposite reaction. It's one of the fundamental laws of physics. Economics works the same way. When we go out and spend more than we make, then we create debt and we pay interest. There's a consequence that comes from that. Bankruptcy doesn't happen in a vacuum, boys and girls. Bankruptcy is the inevitable result of fiscal irresponsibility. Governments go bankrupt. Argentina went bankrupt just recently. All of the banana republics have gone bankrupt over and over and over again. And every time these governments go bankrupt, the people take it in the shorts. The money becomes valueless, and then they have to come up with a new money. Now, the one money that God gave us that never loses value and is always constant is called gold. It has a junior partner called silver. Gold is valued in silver, and silver is valued in gold. There's two very valuable monetary units that work in tandem to value one another. Now, we've violated some very basic laws here with our Federal Reserve Bank, our paper money, stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, mortgages, second deeds of trust, the Securities and Exchange Commission, interest and usury. I mean, there's certain things that we've done over the last 50 or 75 years that are going to come home to roost at some point in time. Now, many of us have been saying it's going to come home to roost very shortly. And we said that in the 1960s. Didn't happen. 1970s. Didn't happen. 1980s. Didn't happen. 1990s. Didn't happen. 21st century. Hasn't happened yet. But boy, are all of the signs pointing to, will this last another year, another 2 years? I don't know. I'm not a prophet. I'm just here to report that the New York Times, the International Monetary Fund, and Alan Greenspan are sending up little trial balloons of warning so that when this thing turns turtle, they'll be able to say, well, see, we told you. Remember, it was Alan Greenspan back in 1996 that coined the term exuberance. What did he say? Irrational exuberance. Remember that term? And that was in 96. Now, it took another 5 years for the market to puncture. But, you know, time tells the tale. And it finally happened in March of 2000. Now the Fed has been working laboriously, printing new money. We've gotten into two wars so that we can justify the spending of that money. And as I mentioned in the last program, thank God for Hurricane Katrina. It'll probably give us another 2 years. 600,000 houses destroyed. The government's talking about spending $500 billion. Listen, when the government talks about spending $500 billion, you know that that's just the tip of the iceberg. It'll be $1 trillion or more, two or three times what they're talking about. That's the ultimate bill. And that's because there's nothing as inefficient as government. If there is, I haven't heard of it yet. Remember last time I told you that a penny postcard, which now costs 22 cents, was a penny. That's why they called it a penny postcard back in 1950. A penny postcard had been a penny from 1792 to 1950. Then they had to raise the price to 2 cents, and then 3, 5, 7, 9. In 1974, it was 8 cents, eight times what it cost in 1950. Now, let me give you another example. The cost of educating a child about 1900 was about $25 a year or less, depending upon the state you were in. $25 a year would educate a child in public school in 1900. Today, it costs $7,000 to educate a child on average in a public school in the United States. It costs $3,000 in parochial school. That's when you send them to the Catholic school. It costs less than $600 if you do it yourself at home. Now, what that tells us is that when government gets involved in any activity, they will make it worse. It'll cost two or three times as much, and the outcome will be half as good. Which is why I've said in the past, there isn't anything that government cannot do half as well for twice as much. And they're about to demonstrate that down in New Orleans. Now, Donald Trump the other day was on TV and he said, now, if you give tax credits and you let the private sector rebuild New Orleans, it'll cost less than half of what it's going to cost if the government does it. And it'll be twice as good a job. He's just about right. Just about right. If the government does it, it'll cost twice as much and be half as good. But the government needs a works project like Franklin Roosevelt with the CCC and the WPA. That's what's coming next. We're going to have the equivalent of a CCC. That was a Civilian Conservation Corps, or a WPA, a Works Progress Administration, to rebuild New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. Whether it should be rebuilt or not is not the question. You see, The war in Iraq is winding down. The people of America are becoming disgruntled with the war, which we needed to stimulate our economy. The people aren't satisfied, not happy with the war in Iraq, but they're more than satisfied and more than happy to spend twice as much money down in the Gulf Coast states. So we'll shift from the war in Iraq over to the Gulf Coast, and we'll spend that money, and that money will act as a stimulus. Already the price of plywood has gone up 50%. Prices are escalating. Inflation is rearing its ugly head. But in the process, millions of people are going to be put to work rebuilding those Gulf states. So it's going to stimulate the economy. Now, of course, there's a massive debt coming out of that, and that massive debt has interest. And that massive debt and interest and the inflation that comes from it has a cumulative effect that none of us have faced, none of us have felt yet. Dr. Apple goes on, he says, for the International Monetary Fund to use phrases such as dangerous global imbalances and wrenching correction and unsustainable fiscal stimulus, with these kinds of strong statements of concern, if not outright fear, I believe that the IMF is sending a scathing message, not only to the United States government, but to the United States people as well. Now, Alan Greenspan, with his statement, vast increase in market value, is referring to the current enormous overvaluation of the housing market and, I believe, stock prices. Greenspan appears in total agreement with the IMF statement that housing prices that are defying the laws of gravity. Do you remember Greenspan's famous 1996 irrational, exuberant speech regarding the stock market? Well, the Dow Jones Industrials were in the mid-6,000 range when he made that statement. Do you believe that he views the market as being less overvalued today and any less dangerous today in 2005 than it was 10 years ago, with the Dow Jones today in the mid-10,000s? Alan Greenspan's reference to history has not dealt kindly with the aftermath of protracted periods of low-risk premiums in his Fed-speak, sugar-coated fashion of addressing the likely severe and damaging economic fallout when price levels return to normal. I believe that these unnerving observations by Alan Greenspan and the International Monetary Fund are likely the tip of the iceberg. And as time passes, I believe that similar statements will be espoused by more and more conventional economists and government officials. They will be preparing the world and the people of the United States for the potential economic meltdown that was created by our nation's prolonged, egregious deficit spending campaign and the creation of this enormous amount of dollar credit that they have fostered over the past 60 years. The voices of the doom and gloomers will be increasingly joined by those emanating from mainstream America. They will be vindicated in the final analysis. However, just as all Americans benefited from the higher standard of living generated by this decades-long artificially induced boom, we may all have to suffer the consequences when this business cycle turns down and this contrived boom turns into a bust. Now, I realize that my analysis of the comments by the IMF and Alan Greenspan are disconcerting. However, I believe that it is better to face the reality and the truth of the situation and then to prepare for its consequences rather than to put our heads in the sand and ignore its reality and its potential damaging effect. My hope is to help the reader recognize our nation's precarious condition and to prepare for the difficult times that lie somewhere right up ahead. And as the world citizens recognize the dangerous position that they are in, they will also understand that gold is the lifesaver, not more paper. And further, the term gloom and doomer will likely cease to be heard when people begin to realize what has transpired and they finally rush headlong back into gold and silver, which is what God told us to use. Remember, you shall not have in your bag an unjust weight or balance. Now that's Richard Apple. Richard Apple. Let's see if we got an email address for him. Just go to kitco.com and look for Apple, A-P-P-E-L, Kitco, K-I-T-C-O.com. Quite a story, Dr. Apple. Well, in addition to that, we've got the international forecaster. Bob Chapman had a little to say this week on this thing of inflation, monetary markets, and so on. I'll give you a couple of three excerpts from Bob Chapman when we come back. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archive. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, economics, politics, religion news, and current events. 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are believed to be true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications used on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. The endorsements or recommendations that we give, however, do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review, at least in total. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management or staff of this network, or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, remember georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Now, remember I pointed out to you that a penny postcard in 1950 cost 1 penny. Today it costs 22 cents. Now, that's a 2,200% rise in price over the past 50 years or so. Postcards went up eight times by 1974. But by 1974, the price of gasoline was 60 cents. While the price of a penny postcard went up 800%, the price of gasoline went up 100%. It doubled in price. Now, the price of gas today at $3 a gallon is 11 times what the price of gas was back in 1950. So the price of gasoline has gone up 11 times, but the price of a penny postcard has gone up 22 times. Prices in general are 10 times higher than they were in 1950. Gas is where it should be at $3 per gallon. The cost of education today at $7,000 to educate a child is more than double what it costs today to educate a child in a private parochial school. And it is $550 to educate a child at home. In other words, it costs 14 times more today to educate a child in public school than it does to educate that same child at home. Twice as much to educate that child in a public school as it does in a private parochial school. Now, your savings are losing their purchasing power at the rate of 12% per annum right now. And while the government is telling you that the inflation rate is around 6%, the truth of the matter is it's double that, 12%. And we're reading about wrenching corrections and irrational exuberance, but inflation is being encouraged. Deflation, back in the 1930s, is to be avoided at any cost, even if we have to dump money out of helicopters onto the streets. That's what Bernanke said. He's the head of the Federal Reserve up in New York. Bernanke, he'll probably be your next Federal Reserve chairman. He's on the President's Council of Economic Advisors. Now listen to Bob Chapman. Under U.S. Markets, page 3 of this week's International Forecaster. This is the October 2005 number 1 issue, volume 9, number 10-1. You can subscribe to the International Forecaster. Let me give you the name and number here. It's the International Forecaster, Post Office Box 510-518, Punta Gorda, Florida. The zip code is 33951-0518. Again, that's 33951-0518. That's P.O. Box 510-518, Punta, P-U-N-T-A, Gorda, G-O-R-D-A, Florida. You can also get on their email address. It's internationalforecaster@yahoo.com. International Forecaster, two words, @yahoo.com. Listen to this. A report prepared by the Congressional Joint Committee on Taxation says that from 2006 to 2015, Americans will pay $1.1 trillion more under the alternative minimum tax, partly as a result of the Bush tax cuts. Did you get that, boys and girls? Do you remember this much vaunted Bush tax cut program? And the other day, Bush said no new taxes. We're not going to raise taxes to finance the war in Iraq or to finance the rebuilding of New Orleans. Well, there's a tax called the alternative minimum tax. You probably didn't know much about that. But the alternative minimum tax between 2006 and 2015 is going to cost you $1.1 trillion more than if President Bush hadn't tampered with the tax system at all. Did you know that, boys and girls? So you're going to be paying less on your income tax withholding and more on your alternative minimum tax. Just thought that would just make your day. The tax cuts reduce the bill for millions of American taxpayers to a level that will subject them to the AMT instead of the standard rate. So families with children who own homes will be hit the hardest by the increased alternative tax. Exotic deductions are now not allowed, denying individuals their personal exemptions, deductions for state and local taxes and interest on home equity loans not used for home improvements. Some medical bills cannot be deducted under the AMT, forcing the sick or injured to pay higher income taxes as our government spends $6 billion a day in Iraq and Afghanistan. And again, the tax cuts are immensely different from what was promised. But then again, we seldom get the truth from Congress or from the White House. So while the president was giving you this tax cut, he was actually giving you a tax increase of $1.1 trillion. You're going to pay less in your withholding and more in your AMT. See how that works? God bless George Bush. We need more like him. Now, in the past, we have expressed concern that the United States government, with the assistance of the Federal Reserve, might currency block the United States if the dollar plunges and America is inundated with dollars. This is what happened on a central bank-to-bank basis back in 1971 when we closed the gold window and officially declared the dollar to be a fiat currency. The British did the same thing back in the 1930s. What could happen here in the United States is that under the guise of economic collapse, the government could refuse to accept foreign-held dollars and freeze foreign-owned dollars held in the United States. They could then call in all internal currency and reissue new currency. You get a new color. Perhaps on a one-to-one basis, and they could do this if there were a major outflow of assets or if Americans decided to cash in their dollar assets for foreign currencies or gold and silver. We suspect all multinational corporations would be exempted from this draconian move, allowing free flow of their funds along with central banks. We don't know that this is going to happen, but if the financial system breaks down, it is a distinct possibility. The Russians did it back in the late 1990s. If you have lots of money, you can move it to other localities now. If you don't, you should stick with gold and silver related assets. Now, I don't know if you can remember this, but it wasn't very long ago, a few years back. The Russians woke up one morning, it was on Monday morning, and they found out that their government had changed their money. They did the same thing back in 1933. Now, let's suppose that you've got $1,000 in cash in your back pocket on Friday when the banks close. On Monday, they've got a new currency, so the old currency is of no value. You have to take your money down to the bank and convert it. You take your $1,000 in, that's $1,000 worth of greenbacks, and they give you $500, $250, $100, or $1,000, depends on what they decide they want the conversion rate to be, and some new colored yellow money, or red, green, and blue money, or some other combination. And then they put wage and price controls on like Nixon did back in the 1970s. These are all acts of a desperate government trying to maintain control over a fiat currency that is self-destructing. That's what happened back in the 70s. And it'll happen again. History repeats itself. If you're prepared for it, it's no big event. If you're not prepared for it, it's like a hurricane sweeping ashore. Worse than that. You see, with a hurricane, you usually have a few days' warning, but with an earthquake, the ground just opens up, knocks everything down, swallows people up, destroys everything, kills thousands of people, and there was absolutely no warning whatsoever. This economic thing is going to come upon us slowly and inexorably, and then one day the government will have to act like Nixon did when he closed the gold window back in 71. And then that sets off a chain reaction of events. The little guy down here on the job, he doesn't notice anything for months after. Takes months and months for this to actually register. what's happening. It could be the loss of his job, the outsourcing of his job, lower pay, or higher prices, or a combination of all of the above. Now let's take a look at pork. There's no shame and there's no embarrassment, neither in Congress or in the White House. There are but a few statesmen and lots of pragmatic, purchased politicians. They almost all enrich themselves as we head toward financial oblivion. We have two natural disasters 3 weeks apart that will cost $300 to $500 billion, and we have a president who will not increase taxes and a Congress that refuses to cut pork. The Republican leader, Tom DeLay, says there is no fat left to be cut in the federal budget. Does he really believe that all of us are that stupid? I gotta pause right here and make a little comment. In the transportation bill, there's a bridge being built in Alaska for $231 million that goes to an uninhabited island. I imagine that the bridge is being built to an uninhabited island to encourage habitation there. Or perhaps to make it easier for government bureaucrats to cross the bridge to study the environment. Or to study something to collect more tax dollars. Now that's what we call pork. Now it would seem like to me that we could probably live without that $231 million bridge in Alaska and probably could better spend that money on rebuilding houses in New Orleans. But Ted Stevens, the senator from Alaska, is a very, very important member of Congress, and his constituents in Alaska have to be paid their due. When you want Stevens to vote for something that you want, you got to vote for something that he wants. Now that's what this pork is all about. So all of the taxpayers get to build a bridge to an uninhabited island to satisfy Ted Stevens and his constituents in Alaska so that President Bush can get Stevens to vote for CAFTA or some other bill, some other program that the president wants. Going on. If we were not optimists, we'd be very pessimistic and depressed. As optimists, we know that we'll win in the end. The only question is, what will be the price that we Americans have to pay? We have colossal debt, and it keeps getting bigger. We have another quagmire called a war costing $6 billion a day. I think that's $6 billion a month. I'm going to put a little arrow right there, $6 billion a month. When Roosevelt was faced with such a dilemma, he cut non-war spending 20% and Truman cut 28%. Vietnam and Johnson spent with abandon. In 1982, there were 10 pork projects approved by Congress. In our recently passed Transportation Equity Act, there were 6,371 pork barrel acts, totaling $400 billion. There is absolutely no morality left in Washington. It has truly become a den of vipers. All of our elected representatives worry about today is getting reelected by buying votes and campaign contributions. It is a process that is totally corrupt, as is the use of lobbyists, which should be banned. This is beyond cynical. America needs a wake-up call. God tried to give us that wake-up call with Katrina and Rita, but we're not listening. Hedonists never listen. Now, we're told California's house appreciation will only be 10% in 2006, probably versus 14% in 2005. That could be the case if the 10-year treasury stays at 4.25% because foreign governments continue to buy them without incentive for profit. That means a 5.75% 30-year fixed rate mortgage. The exotic mortgages will continue, and the day of reckoning will have been suspended for one more year. In the process, though, gold will go to $850 an ounce as official inflation climbs to 6 to 7%. Now, I want you to notice official inflation. That's what the government tells us it is. And remember, the government lies. about 75% of the time, and they understate these values by about half. Thus, the $523,150 house will increase in value to $575,500 as projected unit sales fall 2% to $630,000. Now, at the same time, the California Association of Realtors tells us that this glowing story, that they also tell us the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage will rise to 6.4% and the 1-year adjustable-rate mortgage will hit 5.1%. That's a 10% gain in value, would mean only 15% of Californians could afford the average home. Now, as the prices of these houses escalate, boys and girls, we're to the point where only 15% of the people in California can actually afford to buy a house. Hey, that tells me that things are getting worse. They're not getting better. Now, this speculative bubble, this speculative boom in houses may actually have benefited from Hurricane Katrina because 600,000 units have been destroyed and will have to be rebuilt. That could keep the housing bubble alive for another year, maybe two, I don't know. And I'm sure that all of us want this boom, this bubble, this Alice in Wonderland, land of Oz, to continue at all costs, at any price, for as long as possible. Does anybody out there really want to face the music? Do any of us really want to face the inevitable hyperinflation that's on the horizon, the collapse of the world's economy, the introduction to the real New World Order, or any of us? Are we ready for this? Well, you might have another year or possibly even 2 years to get prepared for it now because of Katrina and Rita. Because this is the stimulus that government needs. It's the excuse that government needs to pump all of this new liquidity out into the marketplace. Yeah, it's going to bid prices up. You're going to have more inflation. But hey, what the heck, if you can go to the bank and borrow more money, which is going to pay your bills and keep the payments going on the house and on the car for another year, isn't that really all you're concerned about? One more year? But you know, the inevitable finally happened in New Orleans. I can remember for the last 30 or 40 years listening to the story, when the big one hits. Well, boys and girls, the big one hit. I want anybody in New Orleans ready for that. And when the economy collapses, nobody's going to be ready for it. And we're all going to be in the same boat. And it would just make sense to prepare a year or two in advance for what you can see, what you know is going to happen. Now, it's right on the horizon. I showed you that from the Figge report last time. Now, the Congress and the President have raised your taxes by $1.1 trillion under the guise of a tax cut. So while you had your eyes on the sound bites, your ears listening to those sound bites that said, President Bush is cutting your taxes, President Bush is cutting your taxes, President Bush is for the tax cut. And you bought into it, and President Bush gave you the tax cut so that on your weekly take-home pay, you got more. And at the end of the year, when you get your alternative income tax, that's that alternative tax, alternative minimum tax, our taxes actually were increased by $1.1 trillion. Now, isn't that just real special? In California, people are struggling to get by. A family with two working parents and two children needs an annual income. Now, get your pen and paper out, boys and girls, and listen to this. In California, to make ends meet, you need an annual income of $71,377 to cover the basic costs. I mean, sure, your house is worth $500,000. And for you people to support a mortgage that you're paying and interest that you're paying, and automobiles and trips to the dentist and food, clothing, and shelter, you got to have $71,000 to cover these basic costs. Each parent has to make $17.16 an hour. A two-parent family with one income needs to make $24.60 an hour. And a single-parent household needs $25.96 an hour. A single adult needs $12.44 an hour. Statewide, the median average wage was $15.06 in 2004. Okay, now you got this down. Get your pen and paper out. 2004, the median average is $15 an hour, but you got to have $26 an hour. You're $10 an hour short, boys and girls, in California. So to make up that $10 an hour shortfall to maintain your standard of living, you're using your credit cards, which are probably maxed out, and you're refinancing your house and taking the equity out of your house, and this is the means by which the government is pumping liquidity into the economy to keep this going for one or two more years. Isn't that just real special? That's not sustainable. That can't go on forever. We don't know how long it can go on, but we know that it has gone on now for 70 years. We don't know how much longer, but if we can make it work for one more year, we're going to do it. Now, there's a little more to the story. Rising house costs accounted for the biggest increase in Californians' cost of living. In the last 2 years, since 2003, the statewide average cost for a two-working parent family to rent a three-bedroom apartment increased 46%. Healthcare, 29%. Transportation, 18%. And childcare, 12%. Now, they tell you that inflation's 3%, don't they? Well, it's 3% if you're not renting an apartment, you don't have any health care, you don't travel, and you don't have any child care. A three-bedroom apartment increased 46%, health care 29%, transportation 18%, child care 12%. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has seemed to have missed all of this in the CPI numbers. Now, in his 18 years at the helm of the Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan has expended the M1 money supply by 81%, the M2 money supply by 134%, and the all-important M3 by 200%. He created the biggest stock market, real estate, and bond bubbles in the history of the nation. And since 1987, the dollar has fallen by 40%, and the Dow has gained 7,000 points since 1987. Now, boys and girls, that is inflation. Well, put another way, it is the results of inflation. It's the monetary policy which causes the inflation. The price increases are simply the results that you see. Your taxes are up. Your health care costs are up. Your transportation costs are up. Your housing costs are up. And way more than the 3-6% that the government's telling you about. Remember I told you inflation is running 12% per year. $100 deposited in the bank this year will have $88 worth of purchasing power next year. Doesn't that make you just want to save? All right, boys and girls, we're about out of time. Let me give you a reminder here that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, economics, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So thanks for listening, and good night, friends.